Wait, what did you say the show was called? What
what
was
do you
this?
mean? Game
What?
Night?
Oh, the movie. It was Game Night.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I
Are we recording?
Yeah, it's recording now.
Oh, okay.
Just, you know, give us a little bit of, you know,
lead
prepare
in?
Us. Yeah, lead in, I guess you'd call it.
So, what do we call this show?
I don't know. I had a couple names. I thought that, like, you know, Thursday with the boys is fun.
Thursday with the boys?
I was thinking, because it's something that we're going to talk about that we like, you could do, like, you know, teams we like, or, like, our teams, sports we like, kind of thing. Now, what are you thinking?
I don't have any good ideas, but...
Nothing off the top?
Nothing off the top. Nothing that's catchy, that's going to totally draw people in, because we know we're going to get a lot of followers from this podcast.
Well, I don't know if it has to be. I don't know if it has to be catchy. I think it's, you know, it's got to be unique.
Unique New York. We are gonna call it nothing creative.
I don't know. We'll consult Ryan.
We'll
see.
Have to, this is a work in progress.
We'll see what's going on. Anyways,
so this is Thursday, June 14th.
20 what?
It's four, dude, it feels like the 20th.
I feel like July 4th is right around the corner.
Well, that's in like a couple weeks.
Yeah, it's weird. I'm not ready for it at all.
You got any plans?
Yeah, I think I'm going up to Sacramento.
Hey, they got it. They finally got a title.
Finally got a title. I think it was, yeah. I mean, it's been what, like 40 years. They've been battling, you know, in the playoffs for like the past 15. Finally, they made it past that first, second round. But, yeah. I mean, their celebrations have been my most favorite thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, just seeing those guys lose it. And just go crazy. Like, it's amazing.
Well, it's one of those things you wish to experience at some point in your life, being a Padres fan. Yeah. And having your football team ripped from your heart, you know.
Yeah, well, I guess that's why we'll have another, you know, guest on with Ryan to talk about Padres stuff. Because I'm definitely... Chargers stuff, because I'm definitely not touching Chargers stuff. I'm not even going anywhere near... talking about that
hey,
team.
I've fully invested. Every little bit of juice that I've put into the Chargers has been shifted to the Clippers.
Yeah. You're a massive Clippers fan now. That is true. You have to put it somewhere, and I've definitely put it into hockey because the Canucks, love the Canucks. I've put it so much time into them. And then this Capitals postseason run has been absolutely amazing, so I've definitely put it all into that.
Hey.
But, like, this football season coming up, I have no horse in the race. I love football. It's my favorite sport, but I don't even care if the season's coming up.
I think I saw that Phil Simms just put out, like, a top wide receiver duo, and the Chargers were, like, fourth on the chart. That, like, did not even matter to me.
What's the duo? Keenan Allen and who?
That's what I thought.
Or who's that guy they got from Clemson? What's his name? Mike Williams?
Yeah. But he has to
play. But he didn't even play.
Yeah.
So
I don't even know
who's
who
your
else
duo?
Is on that roster, but we'll have to save this for next week when Ryan's on the show. He can fill all of our viewers.
Yeah, because who's the duo? Who's the duo? Gates is out. Hunter, his name?
Yeah, Hunter Henry.
Hunter Henry.
ACL.
Yeah, towards ACL. He's out.
He's out for the year, so...
they have going on. I mean, we talked a little bit earlier off air about how good this, like, how amazing this bullpen has been. Coming into the season, they thought they were, like, the weak link, and just the other day, they had a perfect game going. You know, it's amazing.
I think you're definitely going to see a lot more teams transitioning towards this sort of bullpen analytic style of managing a game where they're going to have, several bullpen arms, pitching maybe 2-3 innings a game and going the distance, because we all know that obviously the more times a hitter sees a pitcher, the better he knows how to hit off that pitcher. So
yeah, the more times you see a ball being pitched, you know what to expect from that pitcher.
But, and each pitcher's kind of got their own unique way of throwing the ball. So obviously if you have one guy who really throws a slider really well and you hit the slider well, you're only going to see him once. So he's only going to at most do damage to you one time. So each pitcher obviously it has like, I guess, something that they're specialized in. So
what they're doing, the Orioles are the pitcher. And I think that's, it makes baseball more fun. I don't know. I'm on the side of baseball's more fun when you see more strikeouts.
I think there's still, for me, I like seeing the ball put in play, and I like base hits. And I think you're seeing less of that, and you're definitely seeing more walks, and you're seeing more strikeouts, and you're seeing more home runs now than ever. And those are like the three true outcomes, and you're definitely looking at a number of things factored into it. And I think Moneyball's obviously that's kind of the backbone behind it. The more pitches
started
you see
it off,
the more you tire out that arm, and the more likely you are to see a pitch that's right in your happy zone where you're going to be able to crush the ball out of the park. And so, yeah, you definitely. To me, it's not quite as exciting, but I do think people like home runs, so there's nothing. I think it's just a personal preference at that point.
Yeah, I think that's how the MLB is going to keep viewers in the game. They're going to have, for true baseball fans, they want to see small ball. They want to see, like, the chess game out there with the pitchers throwing certain balls to certain hitters, in different locations, the shifts going on. But then you have people that are just there for the wow factor. They're seeing, Aaron Judge hit, multiple home runs a game. Didi Gregorius has had at least 8 games this year hitting multiple home runs. So that right there is astounding, how you're having these guys have multiple games with multiple home runs.
But then what do you do about, the guys like Bryce Harper, who's batting, 250 or whatever he's batting now, 225, and he's got like a 400 plus on base percentage. He's not really getting to see any pitches, so guys are just walking around him. How would you combat that?
Well, I feel like that goes back to, the early 2000s with Bonds. At one point, Bonds was at the plate. He was getting walked every time, but he was still hitting close to 40 home runs a year.
Oh, he's hitting more than that. Yeah, definitely. But Bonds is kind of also, he's one of a kind, and you look at the numbers Bonds is, he's put up, it's just.
I feel like Trout, Harper, Judge, Stanton, there's all those other guys that are in it, your boy Nolan Arenado.
That's my boy.
It's like it's stuff like that. Those guys have proven that in a situation where your arm is twisted behind your back, you have to throw to them. They're gonna make you pay for it. So if you're in that situation where you don't have to throw to them, you throw around them. Now, I have no problem with that. That goes back to my whole piece of, it being like a chess game. You make your move to where you need to go to win the game. I have no problem. That's the one thing I never understood, that I still don't understand, is why when a team has a shift on and the batter decides to bunt Oppo, that the team gets mad at him. You're playing that way.
Well, not only that, you still have to make that play, the bunt. That bunt is
exactly
not an easy bunt, especially for a power hitter. You never practice bunts. You might be.
This is a thing that I hate about Major League Baseball. First of all, any player that gets paid, if you're a baseball player and you get paid over $1 million a year to hit a ball, you need to be able to hit. You need to be able to sit your hands back, and you need to be able to wait on that change up or that curveball and drive it opposite field or that away pitch, you need to slap that oppo, get your hands out in front, leave the bat head behind, drive that away.
Not every guy's a pure hitter, though.
But, I mean, if you're getting paid multi-million dollar contracts, you need to be able to have that ability.
I think that's just it's unrealistic to ask every player that's getting paid to be able to do that. But I mean, you look at our boy Christian Villanueva. He is totally specialized in
He's a straight pull hitter.
Yeah, heavy pull hitter.
I would say Renfro's the same way, heavy pull hitter.
He's getting a little better, but I think since he got called up, he's actually been hitting the ball off.
I think the only power hitter we have on our team that isn't a pull-heavy hitter would be Will Myers.
Well, and Eric Hosmer. Hosmer leads all baseball in opposite field hits.
Really?
Yeah, all baseball.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I was going to say, because I feel like all his home runs are to right field.
No, he's hit him left center. He's hit a few left center. Yeah, he's a no, it's true. I mean, they've been saying it all year. That's the only reason why I know it. But Hosmer's been – he leads all baseball on opposite field hits. Wow. Yeah. I mean, his batting average is solid, not spectacular, which is how much we're paying him for. But we're also paying Will Myers – well, not this year, but next year we'll be paying him 20-something million, so he better be –
Well, that's the thing that's hard, too, is I feel like the threshold for a MLB hitter now, like a solid average hitter, has dropped. You know, like a contact hitter, their average has dropped between the early, like the late 90s or early 2000s to now. I feel like, you know, you have a hitter that's hitting 250, 260, you're happy with it.
Oh, yeah. If somebody who's hitting 270, you consider him a contact hitter now.
Yeah.
And that used to be somebody.
And that used to be
he was a power hitter.
Exactly.
Hit only home runs.
Yeah.
So now it's total shift. But
so now when I.
That's like what I said, the three true outcomes. You're seeing less of those base hits. And so you're seeing less fundamental baseball, you know, getting that base hit, stealing a base, bunting that runner over, sack flies, that sort of thing. You're not seeing that anymore. And that's kind of like that's traditional baseball. But I think you look at, you know, the outside fans, I think that home run is kind of the more attractive.
The home runs is the factor that people want to see. It's that wow.
Yeah. So I think it just depends on the demographic. You look at the older fans, they probably prefer the small ball like what you used to see. And you've actually seen a couple teams. I think the Royals were successful in doing that. There's a few other teams that were really successful with the small ball, but
I love small ball. I like tuning into a game regardless of who's playing. And, you know, they're down by three. They have a runner on first, you know, one out. They bunt the runner over. They try to get a hit and run going, you know, move them over. Anything like that. I love seeing that small ball. Even if you have a runner on third with, you know, one out, you get that sack fly. That's the play I love the most. I love seeing that fielder's choice, move the runner over, sack fly, whatever it is. I don't know. That's just where I am with baseball.
But let's transition back into Padres, because I think we kind of got a little sidetracked onto baseball.
I mean, we talked about it yesterday. I would love to hear your opinion on the Will Myers, Franchi Cordero rehab assignment. You know, who are you moving down? Where are you making room in that outfield? Because, you know, Will Myers, he, like you mentioned earlier, he has that huge contract, paying him up to $20 million next year. Franchi Cordero, that young gun we brought up, and, you know, early in the season, he was just leading that team.
Yeah, I mean, I think both of them deserve a spot on the roster, especially since both are multifaceted players who can hit for power and hit and have that speed factor. So I think both of them are very valuable in the franchise. I look at, obviously, Matt Caesar's kind of the first name that comes to mind. You look at him, he's kind of he's one of those guys who you look at and, you know, he's a valuable guy off the bench. He's a good utility guy. He obviously can play all three outfield spots, but, I mean, he doesn't offer much at the plate. And I think that's obviously something that you have to factor in when it comes to a roster spot, especially in a team that's got a logjam in the outfield. So I look at obviously maybe sending Matt Caesar down. I think he's obviously the first name that comes to mind. And then it's a crapshoot from there. I look at somebody like Franmil Reyes, who's got enormous power potential, but I mean, the consistency isn't there, and I think he's constantly trying to rip the cover off the ball every time he's up at the plate, and I'd like to see a little bit more contact out of him.
My only thing with moving Franmil down is that, you know, it's like that could be detrimental to a young player's psyche. You know, he's up in the majors, he's doing the best he can, he's in and out. You know, Manny Margot kind of took him under his wing, and they played AAA together. They moved up. His first day, you know, they had that picture on Instagram together where they're, you know, we made it kind of thing. Welcome to the show. So I just feel like sending a player like that down could be bad to, you know, his psyche and how he plays the game. You could have a Austin Hedges situation on your hands where, you know, a guy that you brought up too soon doesn't make it in the majors, send him back down, bring him back and forth, you know, yo-yoing the guy back and forth.
I definitely, you know, there's some truth to that, but when you have a log jam in the outfield, something's got to give. And you there's not a roster spot on this team for every outfielder who's got potential. So you look at it, you're like, who offers you the most and who offers you the least? And I look at somebody like Hunter Renfro. He hit 26 home runs last year. He's hitting better since he got called back up from his rehab assignment. I look at somebody like the leadoff hitter. I can't think of his name right now.
Jankowski?
Yeah, Travis Jankowski. Oh, he's pretty – I honestly, I think he's spearheaded the reason why this team has turned around.
I do, too.
Because we've had a horrible leadoff hitter for – as long as I can remember.
Yeah,
and
he stepped into that role. And
he has stepped in. He gets on base.
He's making plays in the outfield.
He puts pressure on them, and even if he's not, you know, even if he's not playing center field, out of the corner spots, he's playing like a center fielder out in a corner spot. And obviously it's like having multiple center fielders out there who can cover lots of ground.
Yeah, you can never go wrong with that as long as you have a guy that's being that veteran, responsible guy that's calling everyone off.
I like what he has to offer. Obviously, Margot, I think – I look at Margot, and he's one of those guys I don't worry about because I just – I don't know why, but I feel like I can trust him. I think he finished in fifth place in Rookie of the Year voting last year. He hit like nearly 275, I think, last year. He hit somewhere between 10 and 15 home runs. I mean, he's a guy who can offer you speed. He's a fantastic fielder. You just look and you can see potential of greatness. And he's, I believe he's 20, 21, 22 years old.
Yeah, definitely a young player. I think it's, you know, technically his third year up. They brought him up early. They brought him up early for a few games. Didn't qualify as his rookie season. Last year was his rookie season. But, yeah, he's definitely a guy that's, you know, worked his way into the lineup and proven himself. I think Jankowski's the same way that he can step into that role. I love leadoff batters. You know, Jeter was my favorite player. When he led off, he wasn't a first strike swinger guy. You know, worked the count a little bit, started, you know, really looking for that base hit around pitch like 4 or 5 to put the ball in play. I feel like Jankowski does a great job giving the other guys that look, putting the pressure on the starting pitcher, getting on base, getting them back around and scoring runs. And I feel like this Padres team, they've been doing a great job at scoring that lead runner. I feel like for, you know, years our MO was always left on base.
Oh yeah.
You know, you have a runner on first, one runner on first, one out, you're hitting it with double play every time. You have a runner on third, you're stranding that runner. Bases loaded, no doubt, you might get one run out of it, but I feel like these Padres now have been really working together. They get that runner around, they score those runs.
And they were doing that earlier this year. They were struggling with that.
Yeah.
And it seems like ever since, you know.
Ever since they had that shakeup, that little mix-up, Jankowski's in the lineup. I mean, even my boy Spangy's been, you know, putting in work. He's covering ground. He's playing third the other night. you know,
he's valuable. Villanueva is out. His average is struggling.
Well, I mean, I feel like everybody on the Padres, their average is struggling a little bit. Aside from
Hosmer,
he's near
200, but he's, I mean, he does have pop in his bat. He's got speed. He can play third base, second, and outfield. There's so much value in that. So I'm not saying by any means this is roster spot in jeopardy on this roster. And I know the team plans on bringing up, I think, Luis Urias, if he can turn it around, he plans on getting called up maybe later this year.
That'd be nice to see Urias getting called up. That'd be fun.
And I know the team plans obviously to wait till rosters expand and they don't lose a year control out of him. So he's not going
to
be.
He's not
going
to have to waste his rookie ball on back half.
And so, yeah. You look at Freddy Galvis, I think he's obviously an enormous asset to this team.
Huge glove out there.
Defensively, you look at what he can offer and this type of encouragement he can provide for these pitchers when especially a young pitcher, when they're up there and they know that they can count on their shortstop to make plays when the ball's put in play, that just does it provides enormous confidence for these pitchers when they get called up.
So just back to the original question, I think it's consensus if we are bringing up Cordero and Myers, Caesar and Reyes, they gotta be sent back down for reassignment. They gotta go work on something a little bit and wait for their time.
And the main reason why I say that is mostly because the team's kind of thin in the infield, and they have a logjam in the outfield, and so you unfortunately have to send down two outfield arms if you want to do that. You can't obviously move Hosmer to third or anything like that to fill in. And
if you're AJ Preller right now, are you looking to move anybody during that before the trade deadline?
I think the way this team is playing, you have to stand pat. You don't want to trade any young assets to go contend for now because you jeopardize what you've been building for. And I think if you trade away the pieces that they have, you look at certain pieces, I don't think they're going to get what they would get for keeping Tyson Ross. I think Tyson Ross is the big name that's going to get thrown around because Tyson Ross has an ERA in the low threes. He's on a one-year rental, but I don't know if there's a contending team that's going to pay enough to really pry him away from the Padres.
Yeah, but with the logjam in our outfield, like we have crowded outfield, you're not trying to move somebody like Hunter Renfroe. You're not trying to move a young name like Franmil Reyes to get, you know, maybe a bullpen arm, maybe, you know, sweeten the deal, get Brad Hand's name in there. Work a real starting pitcher role out of that?
I think Brad Hand can command an enormous amount, but I think the team looks at him as, you know, a long-term solution for the closer role. You look at him, he's under control, especially after they locked him up earlier this offseason. You know, he's got 3 years of control, and it's a very reasonable contract and very tradable contract. I've spoken to several fans of other teams, and they'd love to have Brad Hand on their team. And like, I'll give you, you know, our top, you know, a few top prospects. I'd gladly make that trade for Brad Hand. And why wouldn't you? The guy's an all-star. He's probably going to be an all-star again this year.
Easily.
I believe he's tied with Wade Davis for the NL saves lead. So you look at what Brad Hand offers, I think it would just be foolish for the team to trade off a proven asset. And then you look at the outfield pieces. I just think unless you're going to get a guy who has control for the foreseeable future, especially since you have, you know, young starters coming up through the minors, I just don't see a deal happening where you're going to trade, you know, Hunter Renfroe for Jacob deGrom, who's with like 3 years of control. You know,
well, I mean, you would have to throw like in one of our prospects, like a Quantrill or with that other big lefty we got this year in the draft.
But then you're losing control. And I think this team wants to have control of these prospects as long as possible. I think you've seen it that they've invested in the young guys who they have control over. That's why they picked up shitty contracts like Phil Hughes. You've seen them pick up bad contracts. Chase Headley. They picked up Chase Headley's $13 million this year to pick up their starter that they were running out earlier this year. And he really has considerably under-delivered, and that's why the team's been transitioning over to this bullpen every 5 days, because he was expected to handle the spot in the rotation, and then obviously Lucchesi went down, and now the team's really thin at the starting pitching position.
Yeah, what do you think they're going to do when they bring Lucchesi back? Do you think they're going to run back to throwing him as number five, or do you think they might try to work him out of a bullpen too?
I look at someone like I think they might transition back, because I think it's very taxing on the bullpen to continue to do this, you know, bullpen day. And that's also another reason why the team can't carry that extra outfielder, because
you need that extra arm.
They need that extra arm in the bullpen.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah, our bullpen's pretty loaded. We got, what, about like 10 guys in there?
Yeah. Brian Mitchell is out of minor league options, so he's stuck on the roster unless the team wants to push him through waivers. And if they did that and somebody claimed him, they picked up Chase Headley's $13 million for no reason. And that would just be – that. Obviously, that would be – I think Preller would be really swallowing his pride by doing that. And one thing I can say about Preller is he's really not been afraid to swing for the fences on some of these moves.
Yeah, definitely. Ever since he came aboard, he definitely was not afraid to back down from, you know, throwing the hammer around and swinging these contracts and getting the guys that he wants on the team, you know.
Yeah.
That's
one of those things you look at and you kind of want your GM to be fearless. I know some of these moves have blown up in his face. You look at signing Will Myers to that premature contract extension. Obviously, that kind of right now is not looking like the best move. You look at
even that 2015 season where he signed, you know, Matt Kemp. That's when Myers came aboard. You know, Norris was on the team. Mm-hmm. Signed all these last minute huge deals with these guys. Kind of blew up in his face. But at the same time, as a fan, that kind of gave me hope into we're not afraid to back down from getting what we want and really reaching for certain pieces. And I like that. I like the Hosmer trade this season, you know, even though in retrospect, you know, it kind of sucks. We shouldn't have spent that much because now our outfield's crowded. Would have been nice to keep, you know, Will Myers at first base. Clearly at first base, he has no injuries. Every time he goes to the outfield, all of a sudden he becomes, you know, the scarecrow that breaks everything. But in the same time, I think AJ Preller's made good moves, and I like what he's done with the team overall.
He's definitely he swung for the fence. He knows he struck out on a few of those moves, and now he's found a way to piece together trades that have gave him young prospects back in return. So I know when he made those moves, he was, you know, taxing. We actually had the number one ranked farm system at the time.
Yeah.
And then he made those trades and totally depleted our farm system. But he has since been found a way to, you know, recoup those pieces. And you look at a trade like, you know, obviously he signed James Shields to that crazy deal, and we're still paying on it. But that trade actually netted us Fernando Tatis Jr., who's the number one ranked prospect for the Padres, and from what I've heard, might be the number one ranked prospect in all baseball next year.
Yeah, and I mean, if they can really groom him, don't pull like a Rizzo kind of thing, and they can really groom him to come up, that would be a great move. And to see him play would really, you know, set that last piece in our lineup to give us a really winning ball club. I mean, the one guy that I really want to see come back and do something is Austin Hedges.
Me too.
I felt like they rushed him up. They kind of kept him in the minors all last season, got his bat going. And now if he can get his confidence, that guy is a winner.
Well, I mean, you look at his numbers in AAA. He's never known as a great hitter, but he found a way to hit for contact. And then somehow last year he hit nearly 20 home runs in his rookie year.
He was bombing.
And his average is horrible. So you look at a guy who was historically a contact hitter in the minors, and then he suddenly hit for power in the majors. You just wonder, you know, what's causing him to change his style of hitting up in the majors. And obviously, you know, obviously the pitching's different, but it's one of those things. I know he's defensive metrics. I mean, last year he was ranked from a combination of, you know, his ability to throw out runners, his ability to pitch frame, and his ability to, you know, obviously, you know, call a good game. He was ranked number one in all of baseball. And like, you just look at something like that, and especially a team that, like the Padres, who is really big in analytics right now. They actually, I think, earlier in the offseason, they brought on someone from who's an executive at Fangraphs, and they brought him on full-time to work for the Padres. You look at a team like that, and you definitely can tell that they don't shy away from, you know, looking at the deep metrics that analytical guys are really into.
My only thing is, like, analytics aside, you have Mark McGuire, that was our hitting coach when Hedges came up. His bat dropped significantly. That was, again, that season that he was hitting all those home runs, not really for contact. Mm-hmm. Goes back down, comes up. Matt Stairs this year really is struggling, you know, at the plate. Behind the plate, he's doing good. But even still, Rafi Lopez, he has more, you know, throwouts at second base than Hedges, who is supposedly this defensive catcher. So at that point, it's like, you know, what does this guy got to do, or where's his head at, and who needs to have that talk with him? Because I know for a fact that bullpen loves him. You know, when Tyson Ross had that no-hit bid going into, like, you know, mid-seventh inning, he, after the game, his after post-game interview was just nothing but compliments for Austin Hedges, telling how much of a great catcher he was. He really helped him out with some frame jobs, you know, really just gave him that confidence with those mound visits. So he's definitely there in the veteran aspect of knowing what these pitchers likes, knowing what to say, getting out there. But his defense has dropped off significantly, and his bat is just not there.
Tyson's all about the frame jobs.
Tyson loves those frame jobs.
Yeah, it's nothing like those frame jobs from Tyson.
Anyways. Yeah.
But I do, going back to what you're saying, Rafi Lopez, I mean, yeah, definitely he's one of those guys I look at, and I think defensively he's kind of got it going, but I'm not sure he's – obviously he's not our solution long term.
Yeah, I mean, I know you're on board with this. I'm in the same thought process that – AJ Ellis, I would love to see a sub, you know, 30-year-old AJ Ellis behind the plate every day for us, because I feel like he has that consistency. He has that mentality, great leadership. He's old, 34 years old. He can't be there every day.
I saw him running second on a double today. That looked painful. It looked like my dad running around first base.
And
the only reason why he got to second was because the left fielder bobbled the ball. Otherwise, he was probably going to hold up for a sharp hit down the line for a base hit.
Oh, yeah. There's no way that it was his choice to go to round first base. You know, he was
But what I will say is I look at him, and I look at somebody who is going to give confidence for these young pitchers as well. Somebody who's been around the block. He's Clayton Kershaw's best friend.
Yeah.
So I mean, look at a guy who's obviously –
Throwing off season with Clayton Kershaw, there's no doubt that you can catch anybody. Yeah. You know, that you're not in their minds. You're telling them the right thing. But
so, I look at him, and I definitely think he's a guy I'd love to see get a little bit more playing time, but I do think, obviously, you know, age is definitely a huge factor there, and it's one of those things. I look at Andy Green, and I think, you know, I have to imagine he has these discussions with AJ Ellis every single day, kind of, hey, you want to catch today?
How are you feeling?
How are those knees feeling?
Yeah.
Are you going to be able to catch 9 innings today? And if not, you're like, would you be good to go, you know, be a pinch hitter if I need to call on you? And I'm sure the answer would be yes if he needed it. But, he's definitely somebody, obviously not a long-term solution as well. Maybe going back to what you're saying, I'd love to obviously keep all of our plethora of outfielders, you know, Renfro and stuff. But if they can, you know, sling a deal that'll get a proven catcher who's got control for the next several years, maybe that would be worth it. But I don't know any team other than maybe the Marlins, who's got JT Realmuto is the only team that really comes to mind. And I'm not even sure what his contract scenario is looking like, but other than that, every team that has a good solid catcher is contending.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. But the stat of the week that I really liked that Ryan sent to us was that win streak. Padres, for the first time since, 2008, that we've gone on to 2010 with a five series win streak.
Yeah.
I think that's amazing. I can't remember the last time that I was so excited to hear a statistic like that. Five series in a row that we've become the victors. I think that they can extend it. I mean, the Braves are, you know, the contenders in the National League, but you look at the score tonight, you know, without that one, cheap run, that was a 3-2 ball game. You know, if Perella didn't make that bad mistake, if they didn't get that cheap hit off of
Tyson Ross.
No, the big right-handed guy that was pigeon-toed.
Adam Simber.
If they didn't get that error off Simber, you know, that's a 2-2 game going into the ninth. And, you know, that puts a lot of pressure on a ball club like the Braves, the Padres, with all the momentum coming into this game.
And a phenomenal bullpen.
Yeah, phenomenal bullpen. I think that they could have easily won this game. The series coming up, you know, four-game series, I think they could easily split this.
You got to win it.
Streak alive, but even still,
we've seen them lose the first game of a four-game series
and come back,
and win all three games.
Yeah.
So by no means, and usually historically throughout this win streak of series, they've lost the first game and come back
and win the rest. Exactly.
Maybe next week we'll be able to have a conversation about how I believe I saw on the game today that if they win six, it would be the first time since 2009. Honestly, this is the most exciting it's been to be a Padre fan since 2010, which is the last year the Padres had a winning record.
Yeah, and I mean, it's great just to see them. I mean, coming into the season, like we said, we would just be happy with a 500 ball club at the end of the season, and we're almost a 500 ball club going into the All-Star break. And, you know, the Padres have been known to be a late-starting team going after the All-Star break, really running for it, and, you know, like five games out of first place. Obviously, the West is a very crappy division to be in this year. But at the same time, it's like, you know, there's possibilities.
Well, the Padres said that by a long shot, the best last-place team in all of baseball,
yeah,
which is a very pathetic way of looking at things. But you look at it, they've won, I think, 33, 34 games. The next closest team's like 28. So they're like five games better than the next crappy team. So it's just, the division's just – it's very competitive right now. And you look at it, obviously nobody's running away with the division at this point, which is perfect opportunity for the Padres to at least give the fans some hope.
Exactly.
And another reason why I don't see them trading off some of those pieces at the trade deadline is, you know, they have far more to lose by trading away an asset than what they would get from trading away Tyson Ross for a team that would maybe give, I think they'd probably at most give up a top five prospect like at best.
Yeah, and right,
for Tyson Ross for a one-year rental on a mid and on a starter in his early 30s.
And I feel like AJ Preller has set his standard of how many prospects that he needs on his team. I mean, you look at that minor league team.
Chalked.
That minor league team is primed, ready to go from the bullpen all the way to the infield. Our outfield's already stacked. You're kind of doing a roto right now with who's going down, who's coming up, and coming into the All-Star break, going out of it. It's going to be – they're a fun team to watch right now, surprisingly. Definitely surprisingly.
Definitely, definitely. Well, what are we – where are we at time-wise?
Time-wise, we're at – I don't know. They do it in bars, so – I don't know what that means. I feel like we're at a solid, we're probably at a solid, like, at almost an hour.
Well, I think next week we'll be able to talk a little bit more, I don't know if we'll be able to even connect next week, but next Thursday is the NBA draft, which is supposed to be huge trades going on this year. This is actually supposed to be the deepest draft in years since, like, they're talking, Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Draft.
I mean, I'm not a huge NBA guy. Like I said, I do like watching the Lakers when they're doing good. Really, I haven't watched the Lakers since Kobe left because, again, Kobe's my favorite player. But, seeing that parade, the GM of the Golden State Warriors just totally just being a dumbass over there, just saying, oh, yeah, Kevin Durant won't get anything he wants. I mean, Steph could have anything, but that's because he's different. Kind of just putting him on blast for what he could get. I don't know. That was kind of embarrassing, but
I think he's going to – he will – if he doesn't offer Kevin Durant everything he wants and Draymond Green, there's going to be definitely some turmoil on that team. We know, actually, there was an article that came out on ESPN earlier this week. Draymond Green literally did some research, studied the collective bargaining agreement, understood how the contracts were structured, and he structured his contract so he could save, so he'd make less, so that way the summer that Kevin Durant was a free agent, the team had enough money to pay a max contract to be able to sign Kevin Durant. And he had actually recruited Kevin Durant over to the Warriors.
If he put all that time and effort into, understanding the structure of a collective bargaining agreement, and then Kevin Durant to not get that max contract, I feel like that would definitely throw
Draymond off, and then Draymond is obviously he's a free agent next year at the end of next year, and he's already told the Warriors that he is not going to settle for anything less than a max contract. So, if you look at someone like that. Obviously, somebody who's getting an aged big man, it's obviously if they signed him to that deal, the team owes it to him. They owe him that contract because he took a step back so they can win, three championships in 4 years, and probably gonna more than likely win another one next year. But
all I know is that the Lakers have enough money. If they wanted to, they could go after Kawhi, they could go after Kevin Durant, and they could go after Paul George. And
I think LeBron was the name they're throwing out. Kevin Durant's already said he's already saying he's going to re-up with the Warriors. But
yeah, well, I mean, if KD decides to re-up with the Warriors, then I mean, you never know. That's the thing. You never know.
They do say one thing,
depending on who they talk to. But
and Kawhi's they're gonna have to trade for Kawhi if they want to do that. So they're gonna have to trade all their young assets to get him. And I don't even know if that's enough to pry him away. But LeBron's promising, but we all know what LeBron does to teams. He totally
He takes them over. He takes
them over and he guts them out for veterans and leaves the team for. He's kind of the Dave Dombrowski of the NBA, where you look at what the Cavs are going to look like shit for the next several years because of him.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, every team that he goes to and then leaves, he does the same thing, the Heat, the Cavs. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a good point, but, I mean, I love the Lakers' young talent. I think it's hilarious, the whole Lonzo Ball, Kevin Kuzma, best friend rivalry type thing that they got going on. So it'll be an interesting Yeah, next week it'll definitely be an interesting take on what happens with the NBA draft and who's going to go with what.
Well, apparently, according to Wash, who does like all the, you know, he's like the Adam Schefter of the NBA, that LeBron has already talked with the Cavs and let them know what his intentions are with that team moving forward, whether he's going to go free agency.
Any word on what he said?
Team. But there's no word yet on what he said. So it's one of those things you would have to think if LeBron was staying, that they're going to trade away because they have that Brooklyn Nets pick. They would use that as a trade piece to get some proven players to contend now. But if LeBron leaves, they're going to have to trade away Kevin Love because the team's not going to contend right now. Yeah. And so you got to trade away all the proven pieces that you can, but they're stuck with some pretty bad contracts with J.R. Smith, Tristan Thompson. It's like I said, LeBron, he gets his guys paid, but it really hurts the team long term.
Yeah, I mean, plus, I don't know. I feel for LeBron. I feel like he has matured as a player. He's a great person overall. You know, he's a great person. You know, through everything, you know, he came from a poor background, got that multi-million-dollar contract, only has, you know, same wife, everything, no drama, anything that's going on. Great leader on and off the court, but at the same time, you have to mature to a level that you have to take that backseat role. You have to be, if you're going to be a player's coach, you have to transition to that coach over the player. You know, Kobe struggled with it for years, but he was a different type of player, different mentality on the court of, we're going to win how I say, not we got to win. And
he's no doubt, he's obviously one of the best players to ever play the game. And you watch him play, he's a polarizing player. Very few players can handle him one-on-one. And so he's just a mismatch when you get there. And he makes plays when you don't expect him to make the play, and he finds a way to make the play. And he continues to amaze you. But you look at this last year, which obviously I can't really totally put that on his fault because the team made a massive overhaul of their roster, and they didn't really put a good system in place around him. And the system was get the ball to LeBron, make a play.
Yeah.
You know, but they didn't have an offense tailored that really kept everyone accountable and spread the ball around and kept everyone, you know, active on the team. It was kind of like LeBron's got the ball, somebody double him. Hopefully he's going to kick it to the open guy so he can hit the open shot. But he hasn't touched a ball or shot the ball in 10 minutes. So he doesn't know what it's like to shoot the ball through the hoop.
Yeah.
And so it's like one of those things where it's passing the ball to a cold shooter. And you just want to keep everybody warm, everybody get a touch of the ball. And I look at a team like the Warriors, they do that better than any other team in the NBA, and that's why they cooked them in the NBA Finals.
Yeah, plus, I mean, to that point, it's you have to get that confidence going for a player. You know, it's detrimental to have a guy that's open on the wing, and instead of kicking it to him, you go for that drive and you miss that layup. You know, it's – you got to keep those shooters high. You got to get people involved in the game, or else, you know, at that stage when you're getting paid millions of dollars, regardless of what your real attitude is, deep down you're still a diva. You want that ball. You want to take that shot. You're wide open. You're feeling it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, to get it'll be interesting to see what LeBron decides what to do, because I feel like that really sets a tone for the rest of the NBA. And it's interesting with this whole comparison of, you know, LeBron, MJ kind of stuff, and regardless of where you stand on that point, it's more or less like there's never been a player in the NBA that determines how the NBA sees the next season. Because regardless of, or, you know, depending on what LeBron does, that changes the whole tone for the upcoming season.
Oh, he's a polarizing player.
Yeah, and I feel like with, you know, Michael Jordan, he was a polarizing player, but he was a consistent player. You knew what he was doing. He's staying with his team, his guys, and he's doing what he knows how to do. LeBron, he can go take his talents anywhere and change that team and make them a contender.
Well, people want to play with a winner.
Yeah.
And he's been to 8 straight finals, and you look at a player who's never been to a finals, they're going to be attracted to that.
It's an attractive mentality, to be a winner, to be hungry. It's
you can get a veteran, a proven veteran on a veteran minimum contract, and he's going to sign for him because he really wants to go to finals for the first time.
Yeah.
And so you end up getting, you know, an all-star caliber player for league minimum when you're a team like the Phoenix Suns who have just Devin Booker. If they wanted to get that proven player, they're going to have to pay, you know, a max contract to get this proven veteran, you know. And I look at a team like the Philadelphia 76ers. They paid $23 million to get J.J. Redick on a one-year contract. Because the team went from winning, you know, 12 games a year, 13 games a year, something like that. And obviously now that their young guys are playing better and they have a couple more veteran players and they got a couple other sharpshooters on the team, they're now a playoff contender, could probably go to the Eastern Conference for the next several years.
Yeah, they're easily like one piece away from being those East contenders. But
so that's a little bit about the NBA. Next week will be the draft. There's supposed to be several big name players going off the board there, and obviously a lot of movement. You look at the draft; it's supposed to be deep, you know, 1 through 20, from what I'm hearing. So like.
So what day is that draft on?
Next Thursday.
Yeah. Okay.
So
we'll have we'll watch that beforehand, and then give a quick overview right afterwards.
That's what we got to do. So.
I live for the draft, regardless of what sport it is. You know, all the way from NFL
there's going to be a lot of trades.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, any time there's a draft, NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL, they're just fun to watch because you have those guys that you know, you hear all the buzz about initially, and you start reading about them. You're like, oh, man, this kid sounds good, or, oh, I don't know if he should really be it. Let's watch them, and then – all of a sudden you start pulling for a guy and you just want to see him go early and see if they go early or if they sit. You know, you have your opinion straight off the bat, but it's just fun. Drafts are always fun to look at or to watch.
You know, you look at all the hype that goes into some of these guys, you know, and you end up – when it happens, you look at it and you're like, well, we're going to find out if this is going to be all hype or this is – this guy's the real deal, what everyone's saying he is. You look at a guy like Trae Young, who's supposed to be the next Steph Curry, he's getting drafted, and he's supposed to fall back at like 5, 6, 7, maybe even 8. And so draft that deep, you look at a guy who in college is just making incredible shots at a young age. You just know this is a really deep draft. And a lot of big men who can handle the ball. And you look at even somebody like Luka Doncic, who's this European superstar, supposed to be, from what I'm hearing, is Manu Ginobili basically on steroids and at a young age, too. I think he's like 19 years old. And I know we got a couple of the Clippers. I know Milos Teodosic, who's like a pretty much a career lifer in the European League, says that Doncic is the best player he's ever seen play the game. So you look at somebody like that. You look at Michael Porter Jr., who is this young high school star who, you know, got hurt. Has a little bit of injury history, but is supposed to be the best player in the draft. But he's obviously going to fall back because he's kind of got that injury scare. And you obviously look at someone like that who you're not sure if he's going to be healthy when he plays. He's going to have that healthy career. And then Mohamed Bamba, a guy that the Celtics, who are, you know, obviously very, very late in the draft, I think they're in the late 20s, talking about trading up for a guy who's supposed to fall in the top 5. If a team like the Celtics, who's got a history of making the right decisions, willing to make those moves, you got to know that guy's obviously got to be quite the talent. So – yeah, a lot of moves. I think a lot of people are looking to trade. I know my Clippers, they have back-to-back picks at 12 and 13 from that Blake Griffin trade that we made. They've talked about trading up for either Michael Porter Jr. or Luka Doncic. Honestly, I look at them, and I wouldn't even mind them trading back because you look at somebody like Grayson Allen, who's supposed to be a second round pick.
The Tripper.
He's a total heart. Like, I know the Clippers are trying to build their team around, you know, playing hard every possession, and he's that type of player. And so I look at him. Obviously, Aaron Holiday, which is Drew Holiday's brother, is supposed to be in the draft. Giannis Antetokounmpo, his brother, is supposed to be in the draft. You have so many of these guys who are supposed to fall in the draft that, you know, it's just a very deep draft. It's one of the deepest drafts that the league's seen in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, that'll be, like you said, it'll be fun to watch and see where everybody goes. It's, just to see a guy like Trae Young, like you said, I'm not a huge basketball guy, but just to see all the hype that surrounded him even going into, I mean, he was the whole reason that Oklahoma even made it into the NCAA tournament. You know, obviously Oklahoma State should have made it over them. You know, you have a team like Oklahoma State, beat them twice, and Oklahoma still makes it. They don't make it, but the whole fact that they have Trae Young on their team, people want to see him in the tournament, is just, and then see him drop into, like, even a 5-6 mock draft seed is incredible, because you think a guy like that would just be a game changer for a team.
But you don't know if that's all hype.
Exactly. You don't know
if that's going to translate into the NBA. You don't know.
Yeah.
And so it's just interesting to see who is a believer in which player, and, you know, seeing how they're going to transpire into the league. And obviously, they make these huge decisions that really alter the team's future for the first, you know. And obviously, you don't know those results until, you know, a couple of years down the line. But it's the first big piece for, you know, the next several years to follow.
Okay, well, I think that wraps us up.
That wraps us up. We got the NBA teaser, NBA draft teaser, and kind of covered a little bit about the...
you got the Padres in there.
The Padres with the Cordero, Will Myers conundrum. Maybe it touched up a little bit upon the Padres catching scenario. As well as, you know, whether or not we think the Padres should be buyers or sellers at the deadline. I think that's obviously the big thing.
I think they should be neutral as well. I don't think they really need to buy or sell. They don't need to shop or, you know, really shop any players that they have. I think that where they are now and what they stand with now is a good ball team. And small moves that they see in the future is
obviously
really
set up. If they get an offer that just blows them away, I think it would obviously be foolish for them to do it, but by no means are they in a situation where they need to make a move.
Yeah, no, I don't think they need to set up any pieces or offer anything that's out of the norm.
Definitely.
Again, we didn't settle on a name.
You got
a last vote for the name?
I think I'm going to need like a week at the very least to, you know, think it over, but I know you're thinking Thursday night with the boys, but
I'm thinking Thursday night with the boys because, I mean, like, you know, it's Thursday night, we're on the West Coast, it's, what time is it now, we're wrapping up, 10:30?
Damn,
you know, it's
this is definitely more than now.
Yeah, it's a long, this is a long, long
we're
first
send
show.
Send this over to Ryan so that way he has to listen to it all.
Yeah, he's got to listen to it. Ryan's
that's
gonna,
his punishment.
That's what he gets for not being here for the first one. He's got to listen to the full unedited version of this podcast. Yeah, Thursday night with the boys. We'll figure out Ryan's take, figure out your take. But overall, I mean, this was a fun first episode. I had a good time.
Yeah, definitely. We'll have to continue it next week or probably the following week, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we could always figure something out.
We could Skype it.
Yeah, Skype it.
I think I'm preoccupied next Thursday, but I can do Wednesday.
Wednesday, I mean, well, the whole point Thursday is with the draft. We could do a Thursday pre-show with, you know, expectations with the draft. We don't really have any listeners right now anyway, so no one really cares what, you know, they're not expecting a weekly thing from us. There's no commitment right now.
You're telling me we're going to let down our listeners already?
Yeah. It's going to be our two viewers, because I'm going to tell my mom and you're going to tell your mom. And that's going to be about it.
Well, we to call it a night and
call it a wrap. If anybody goes back on this episode from multiple episodes in advance, thanks
we
for...
We need to get in some callers, too. Is there a way we can do that?
Yeah, I'll have... it'll just have the old ladies call us.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.